Well, about a minute and a half ago, we finally managed to switch controls. I happen to be with Al Jolson now in Studio 7, which is about 50 feet down the hall. I'd like to give you the picture. We're in a much larger studio. It's about 50 by 50. There's a piano sitting in the middle of the floor. Harry Angst at the keyboard. Al and I are sitting across from each other at a long table. He's got a mic in front of him on a boom. A boom means a suspended mic. I've got a mic in front of me that's the feature mic. That's the short one with no jokes. And seated around the room, we have 20 or 30 people, Henny Youngman, Joey Fay, Yuki Sharon, and guests. Leo Lindy is here. And incidentally, I'd like to take a moment out to thank Leo for making sure that Al got here tonight safely and soundly. Leo, my pup. We have a lot of people that have suddenly appeared from out of nowhere sitting in the sponsors booth. And I called up Beth and told her to be sure and listen because we both enjoyed the Jolson story. And Al is sitting across from me. So is Joey Fay would say, I mean, Joey Adams, so what's new?
Well, I don't know. You asked Joey Adams what's new. I don't know how close I am to this mic. I haven't...
No, anywhere you want to work, the engineer will...
Anywhere I want?
Yeah.
I mean, I can even sing out. I mean, I don't have to purr like a crooner, you know, sing boo-boo, you know, anything like that. You know, really give out. I mean, like a healthy individual at a quarter to four in the morning.
I want to tell you one thing, Al. Right at this moment, the show is being listened to from New York to St. Louis and from Maine to Miami, and we've got an audience of a minimum of 850,000 people. And for an all-night show, we think that's a lot of people, and I think it'll make you feel pretty good.
Want to know something? Yeah. When I was on the radio in the daytime, I never had that many people.
Yes, you did. What would you like to sing?
Anything you want me to sing. You Made Me Love You, Swanee, April Shower, Sunny Boy, Rose, anything.
How about Rosie, my favorite?
Well, Harry only knows the chorus of Rosie, and it's kind of sketchy. He will give it that really the Kneisel Quintet touch. If you give me that da 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 da, but play it in a low key this hour of the morning, I want to just easy like two choruses. Rosie, you are my posy. You are my heart's bouquet. Come out here in the moonlight. There's something sweet, love, I want to say. Your honey boy, I'm waiting. Those ruby lips to greet. Don't be so aggravating, my blushing Rosie. My posy sweet Rosie, you are my posy. You are my heart bouquet. Come out here in a moonlight. There's something sweet, love. I'm going to sing about my baby. Your honey, your boy, I'm waiting. Those ruby, those lips to greet. Don't be so aggravating. My blushing rosy, my posy sweet.
You know,
Barry,
yes.
I bet you don't know where that song is from.
Well, before you tell me, I just want to say one thing. You know, there's the old story about you can shoot me while I'm happy.
Yeah.
If I had ever thought that someday I'd be sitting across the desk from Jolson while he sang my favorite Jolson tune. I mean, right now you can drag me out. I'm all through. I don't want to hear any more.
No, I want to tell you a funny thing. Really, this is funny. This song was sung by Faye Templeton in Weber and Fields Music Hall at 29th and Broadway. I was a kid, hungry in New York, didn't have a job, and I walked up to Weber and Fields, the stage door. I went in, and somebody asked me what I wanted, and I told him I wanted a job. He said, a job? I said, yeah. What's what kind of a job? I said, it's a chorus man. Well, I was too little for that job, and I didn't get it, and still hungry. I walked up the street and found another rehearsal hall, and there was a show rehearsing called Billy Van and the Errand Boy. And Mr. Sam H. Harris was the producer and owner of that show. Told him my story and he asked me what song I knew. Well, I'd haunted the door of Weber and Fields so many times in the past 2 weeks before that I heard Faye Templeton sing that song, I knew it. But Rosie, you're my posy.
That song is very old. I don't want to say how old it is, but I learned that song pretty good, and I sung it. And Mr. Sam H. Rice advanced me $20, which I paid 6 weeks' room rent and had a couple of bucks to go to a place on 14th Street called Riggs, where they gave you for 20 cents a steak, and with the steak, they gave you the biggest kind of bowl of bread. So I went with that show for a few months, and I got fattened out, and that's the story of the Moth and the Flame. Now, what would you like to have me sing, Barry? I'm here till you close up.
I'm very happy, Al. Well, how about Swanee, Mammy, let me see, how about... I'm trying to think of the songs from the Jolson story.
Well, let me just mention one song that isn't in the Jolson story, and a lot of people have asked me why it isn't in the
Sonny
Jolson
Boy.
Story. Yeah, Sonny Boy. Funny thing, when we produced the picture, when we, I not only produced the picture, but when we previewed the picture in Santa Barbara, we had Sonny Boy in the picture.
Uh-huh.
But the people cried so much after that, we couldn't get back to running the picture again. We came back to it, but the people weren't interested. I mean, they kept crying. They didn't look at the picture, so we cut it out. Now, if Harry wants to play Sonny Boy, as only he can play it, and I'll sing it as bad as I can sing it, this hour in the morning, I want to tell you about the song, Sonny Boy. I don't like to sing it much because a lot of people attach a lot of sentiment to it. It's sentimental, all right, but it's corny as a deuce. Only thing it ever did for me, the royalties, I bought a home in Florida. Outside of that, nothing. But, Harry, will you play Sonny Boy? You want to play the verse in two choruses, and the second chorus, I shall emote. Climb up on my knee, Sonny Boy. Though you're only three, Sonny Boy, you've no way of knowing. There's no way of showing what you mean to me, Sonny Boy. When there are gray skies, I don't mind the gray skies. You make them blue, Sonny Boy. Friends may forsake me, let them all forsake me, I still have you, Sonny Boy. You're sent from a heaven, and I know your worth. You've made a heaven for me here on earth. When I'm old and gray, dear, promise you won't stray, dear, for I love you so, Sonny Boy. Gray skies, I don't mind the gray skies. You make them blue, Sonny Boy. Friends may forsake me, let them all forsake me, I still have you, Sonny Boy. You're sent from heaven, and I know your worth. You've made a heaven for me here on earth. And the angels grew lonely, took you because they were lonely. I'm alone too, Sonny Boy.
Oh, it's wonderful, Al.
You like
tell
it?
Tell me, I remember that one very well. I remember it from the jazz singer. I think it was the jazz singer.
No, Singing Fool.
The following picture,
yeah,
the Singing Fool.
Singing Fool,
there was a boy in it by the name of Davy Lee. Was it David Lee?
Davy Lee is right.
What happened to him?
Well, it was a funny thing. We were overseas, Harry and I, a couple of years ago, and a big husky mug weighing about 180 pounds with more ribbons. He looked like a church window. You know, all those colors.
Uh-huh.
Had in front of him. Says, hello, Mr. Jolson. I said, hello, son. He says, you don't remember me, do you? Well, naturally, I mean, you don't want to make a kid feel bad. I didn't know him from a monkey. I said, your face is familiar. He says, it ought to be. He says, you had me on your knees singing Center Boy, did you? I said, you're not. He said, yes, I am. And that was the kid.
I'll be darned.
That's how old my uncle is.
There was a lot of talk. I remember there was a lot of talk, probably a whispering campaign. 5-8 years after the picture was made, they said that Davy Lee had died.
No.
They're probably trying to make a revival of the picture.
Maybe. No. No, he's very much alive. In fact, just a year or so ago, he was a master of ceremony at a nightclub in Pittsburgh.
Using David Lee, formerly the Singing Fool.
Starring
Al
Jolson. Years
ago,
yeah. What, 1929.
How about April Showers?
April Showers? Well, I tell you, suppose I sing a little lively song first and then go into April Showers. I'll sing April Showers first. Well, I wouldn't refuse you anything. Harry, play April Showers, a verse and two choruses, and we'll get with a nice little lilt to it this time. I think better would be two choruses would be better, you see, because that piano is not a verse piano. I can tell it's not a chorus band the way he played an introduction. Just give me the introduction and we'll start in with the chorus.
Though April showers may come your way, they bring the flowers that bloom in May. And if it's raining, have no regrets, because it is rain, you know, is raining violets. And where you see clouds upon the hills, you soon will see crowds of daffodils. So keep on looking for a bluebird and listening for its song. Whenever April showers come along, though April showers may come your way, they bring the flowers that bloom in May. And if it's raining, have no regrets, because it's raining, you know, it's raining violets. And where you see clouds upon the hills, you soon will see crowds of daffodils. So keep on looking for a bluebird and listening for its song. April showers come along.
What's the story of that one, Al? Do you remember?
Well, that's a winter garden song. I mean, not much story to that, except that Buddy DeSilva, who later became president of Paramount, was a kid that I discovered playing a ukulele at a place called Vernon outside of Los Angeles. You know, it was
the meatpacking section.
The meatpacking section is right, but there's a nightclub there that was owned by a man, Baron Long, who now has the Biltmore Hotel in Los Angeles.
Racetrack owner, too.
Yes, he owned a part of
Caliente
and a part of the old track there, Tijuana. And I came out there and heard Buddy DeSilva play a ukulele for a Hawaiian dancer, and he looked a little bit like Hawaiian. He's Portuguese Hawaiian. And I asked him, would he play for me? And he said he would, and he came on the stage that next night. We're playing Sinbad that night, the Mason Opera House. I don't know, Spring Street or Broadway?
Spring Street.
And he played the ukulele, and he said, Mr. Jolson, he said, I go to Hollywood High here, and I've written some songs with him. I took a song from him, called And Everything, and then he and I wrote together, I'll Say She Does, and I brought him to New York with me. He wrote April Showers. He wrote, A Kiss in the Dark with Victor Herbert, the lyric. He wrote with Vince Yeomans, the late Vince Yeomans, not T for Two, but, They wrote many a song, many a big hit. I can't think of it now. I can't think of them now. And then he wrote this song for me, he and Lou Silvers, that I used in a show. And the following season, we collaborate on a song called Don't Mind the Darkness, Morning Will Come. The title was really Don't Mind the Darkness. And that was taken from a hymn called Dexter Fidelis that I learned when I was a kid when I went to St. Mary's in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the melody and made it, Don't Mind the Darkness, Morning Will Come, Shadows Are Bound to Go By, and when they fly, Rosy Dawn Will Kiss the Sky. So, and we wrote a lot of songs together, and then Buddy started to write pictures, and then he became the president of Paramount.
It's a wonderful story.
Oh.
From a ukulele player.
Machine will make you well, always, Britain.
So what, many business. What happened to Yuki Sharon?
Who? Oh, I don't know. We sang a lot of...
What's the story of the Winter Garden, the runway and everything, the picture they tell in the story they tell in the picture? Is that true, Al?
The runway?
Yeah.
In a way, it is. I had seen the runway before that, though. I was over in Berlin, and I saw Max Reinhardt do a play called Sumerun, and they had a runway in it. And where people made their entrances and exit, coming in and out of the theater... And that's how I got the idea. So now you can have this song. No match. No line. Been trying to light a cigarette for 10 minutes. Go ahead.
Well, in the picture. Oh, here's one thing we've got to settle. You know, for about 3 or 4 weeks, people have been calling me up and they say, Barry, tell me the answer to a question. I got $5 bet, and I say, what's the answer? You know, we answer telephone calls
as
the show goes on. Tonight we're not answering calls. And I say, what's the question? They say, is it true that Al Jolson is actually in the picture of the Jolson story? And I say, yes, in the one scene on the runway where he does a soft shoe dance and he waves at the audience, that is Jolson. Am I right?
Yeah.
I recognize
well, that. Well, I bet it. You see, Larry Parks was great and everything, but I'm not a dancer either, but he couldn't move his feet and Swanee like I move. I've only got one step, and that step I insist on doing no matter what I'm in. And I did it in this. I wanted to show my wife that I was a pickjacker, so they gave me a long shot 200 miles away. I don't know.
Well, it's a funny thing. It's a funny thing, as I say, I went with Buddy Clark, and when that scene came up, he poked me and he said, that's him. So I said, how do you know? He says, look at that head.
Look at that head. You mean on me it looks good, huh?
I know. No, but the shape of the head was different from Larry Parks.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He's got a nice head. He's got a pretty head. He's got hair. That's why it's different.
You've got hair, too.
I got hair, yeah. Can't you, don't you? You can't comb it, don't try. I remember those kind of jokes.
The part that's exciting in the picture, and this is by no means an attempt to plug the picture, but I want the people that are listening, most of the people that are listening now are outside of New York, and the picture won't leave Radio City Music Hall for about 3 or 4 years.
No,
and
you're wrong. I think you're a little bit wrong, Barry. I wish your thought was right. You see, every 8 weeks, the Pioneer have to have, they have a contract, you know, for so many pictures a year. And they, at the Music Hall, what I know about it, they see a picture before it goes in there, you know,
mm-hmm.
before. And they saw this picture and put it in. And everybody's talking about how long it's going to stay. Strange as it may seem, Harry Cohn, you know, president of Columbia Pictures, he's in Los Angeles. He called me up yesterday. He says, Al, I heard you had a couple empty seats yesterday at the matinee. Yeah. So I said, well, what do you want me to do about it? I said, look, Harry, those two empty seats, I have no control over. And I said, another thing, the reason those seats might have been empty, you know, in New York these past weeks since I've been here, the weather's really been beautiful. Indian summer, it's been quite warm. And to show you how true the remarks I'm going to make, I met a fellow tonight, and I said, he said, well, you've got a great picture here over there, Al. I said, yes, it's pretty good. He said, I haven't seen it, but I'm going to wait till it rains. Because, you know, streets are jammed with people. They don't want to go in there to see a picture in the beautiful weather. But today, there was a line of four or five blocks around at 12:30, and there was a line there tonight. Harry and I went by, I don't know, 7 or 8 blocks around at night. And what the ego of a ham predominates, I stood there and looked at him. But I went across the street and said, in case somebody recognized me, I didn't want to see me. But to see all those people trying to get in, I said to her, gee whiz, I wish this picture was showing at Lewiston Stadium. He asked, holds about 20,000. They'd all gotten in at night. I I know the people are going to get in there eventually, but when there's two empty seats, Harry Cohn gets mad as a dickens. But I just wanted to let anybody know, especially you, that matinees, they can get in.
Well, anyway, I said it without running any picture. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting at is outside of New York tonight, people are listening in Philly, and they're listening in Louisville, and they're listening in Canada. They're listening in Detroit and in St. Louis and Chicago. And when the picture gets to those cities, I want them to know what to expect.
Well,
go ahead.
I'm just going to say, if they're listening in tonight and it's around 4 o'clock, they're certainly going to go to those matinees.
Well, the one part that thrilled me, the one part in the picture is when Larry Parks wakes up out of the sound sleep.
Yeah.
And the ham bone is sleeping across the way. He did a wonderful part.
Bill Demarest.
Bill Demarest. He played quite a part in that picture. Everybody, you had a wonderful support.
But I want to tell you, I put him in the cast myself. I engaged him, and I engaged the kid that played me as a little boy, Scotty Beckett.
Wonderful.
But we worried all the time during the picture because he grew like a weed.
He was much taller than Larry Parks, but to finish the picture, we had to have him without shoes, you know, so keep him a little close to the ground.
Tell me, was that really him singing?
What?
Is that really his voice, Scotty Beckett?
No.
It's a dub.
Yeah, another boy. I don't know if it's a dub. I don't know. You mean it's dubbed? Yeah.
It's dubbed in.
Dubbed by another little kid.
Because
yeah.
it's a wonderful boy's voice.
We try to make it as near as mine, you know, instead of a high soprano, a little baritone quality.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I might interrupt. You came in the train with a pal of mine, Danny Shapiro.
Yeah.
And
songwriter.
Yeah, Danny. And Danny told me of an incident where you spoke to Larry Parks. He was making a picture for 20th Century. And
no, not for 20th. He's still making for us.
For
Columbia, yeah.
And Buddy Clark is doing the dubbing of his voice.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm referring to?
Yeah, well, Larry Parks told me he's doing a picture with Rita Hayworth called Down to Earth. And Buddy Clark dubs his voice in this. And he told me, he says, he said, that fella Clark is real good. He's excellent, he said, but I don't like to sing like that. He says, I sing different. Now, he don't sing at all, but he sings different. He said, I don't want those hot singers. I want to sing. He said, well, I'm used to singing. One day during the picture, we made it, he had a cold, and he wouldn't go on. He never sang a note, but he wouldn't go on because he had a cold. He said, I can't give it justice.
That's a very funny thing. I've never met Larry Parks, but the guy is...
The nice boy's married to a very lovely girl, by the way, Betty Jarrett, and call me Mr.
Yeah.
Oh, incidentally, if I think he gets in tomorrow, and if it's, he's only coming in for 2 or 3 days, I mean, two people are happily married, and they live so far apart, because up to this picture, Larry has only been making those B pictures, and wasn't enough money for him to jump on here to see his wife, or vice versa, and she finally has become a great big hit, practically the toast of the town. And especially when she sings that South America, Take It Away. And he told me last week, he says, oh, if I could only go for 2 days to see my wife. Well, they gave him permission to leaving tonight. I think he gets in tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm in town, or if we find out where he lives tomorrow, I'm going to try to get him to come over here, because you'll meet
Wonderful.
A very fine kid. He's really down to earth. He's a nice boy. He really is.
Well, I've met Betty. Betty has been on the show 2 or 3 times. And if he's as nice as she is, the male version, they must be terrific people. I was going to say, the big thrill of the picture is when he wakes up out of the sound sleep, and for the first time in the Jolson picture, you hear the Jolson voice. That's the big...
I love you. You remember that, Harry? I love you. All right, start right there.
Can we wait 22 seconds?
Yes,
because we got regulations, because while we're using these 22 seconds, I can say that this is the Mutual Broadcasting System, WOR New York. And my guest star this morning is making radio history, Al Jolson, the star of The Jolson Story, and an item that would take too long to mention. You don't have to say anymore, and it's The Barry Gray Show, and it's 4 o'clock. If we'll wait just a second.
And in this thing, if you remember, he wakes up and he sings Sweet 16.
Yeah.
Well, I had to sing it so soft, you know, because he's just waking out of a sound sleep, and I don't know... The man in the control room, I'll try to sing it as soft as Larry Parks sings the picture, because this was written by a fellow called James Thornton, many, many years ago, when I had a little room on 14th Street across from where his loose house now, it was upstairs called the Academy Hotel. And I lived next door in another little hotel called the Trafalgar. I only had one blue suit, and I used to save that in case I got a Sunday job someplace. And this is the song I sang. I love you as I never loved before. Since first I met you
on the village green. Come to me, how my dream of love is on. I love you as I love you when you are sweet, when you were sweet.
Song he sings in bed when he wakes up.
Beautiful song.
Now, I don't want to tire the audience that's listening in, 850,000 that's in St. Louis, in Milwaukee, Chicago, where have you, and Jersey, but if there's any other song you'd like to have me sing, maybe the late papers will come out and I will find out who won the fourth race at Bay Meadows. Huh?
Yeah, no, let's sing California Here I Come.
I wanted to ask you if we can interject the stories. How long did it take Larry Parks to get the jutting lower lip, the motions of the hands, the hunching of the shoulders? He's got every Jolson trick down pat, so much so you forget he's Larry Parks.
Well, I made a moving picture of this, you know.
You made the picture first?
No, but I made all the songs in sound and motion. I used to come to the studio about 7 o'clock in the morning, and right up against the wall, I stood, and I had about 8 or 10 or 15 or 20 feet of room, you know, to get around, because I don't stand still, and I'd wear a sweatshirt or a pair of overalls or anything like that. I mean, I didn't make up for it. No makeup.
Yeah.
And I would... Huh? And I'd sing these songs, and I had a camera in front of me. They'd photograph me, and I'd sing them exactly with gestures and all. And he would have then a little 60-millimeter film in his room, you know, his dressing room. And I go up with him. And he got so that he did it much better than me because I can't do a song twice alike.
Mm-hmm.
I never did. I mean, I couldn't have caught my own voice like he did. He just learned them like a parrot, but just perfect. Absolutely
yeah.
Perfect. Breathed at the right time, and his hands and everything. I gave him all the gestures. And the only thing he couldn't do was jump around with a couple of little bum dance steps I can do.
Well, the one scene that brought out the... I've never seen in blackface. And that's something that I will never get over. But the one scene where he does Rosie, You Is My Posy, where he stands in for Bill Goodwin in the picture, that particular part, that was wonderful. The acting that he
well, did. I'll tell you what made it better than ordinarily would have been. It was one of the early scenes that was shot in the picture. And he was more scared than I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, at that time, I went on the stage once to see him work, and I saw how nervous he was that I left. But I just went back and congratulated him, told him, I said, don't be afraid, son, just went in. And if you know the plot of the picture, he wasn't supposed to be too good at that time, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't try to sing the song with all the effort that I gave most of the other songs, you know, like Mammy and Rockabye Baby and You Made Me Love You and all those songs.
Mm-hmm.
But in the picture, when he sings California Here I Come, he gives out, he claps his hands, and you know, he really does. So, Harry, if you play California Here I Come, we'll try to give you a little rough idea. It's just a piano. It's not too easy.
You think you got it?
Hmm?
Do the best you can, Harry.
When the wintry winds start blowing and the snow is starting to fall, then my eyes turn westward knowing that's the place that I love best of all. California, I've been blue since I've been away from you. I can't wait till I get going. Even now, I'm starting in a call. Oh, California, here I come. Right back where I started from. Where bowers of flowers bloom in the spring. Each morning at dawning, birdies sing. And everything the sun kissed me said, don't be late. That's why I can hardly wait. Open up that golden gate, California, here I come. California, here I come. Right back where I started from, where bowers of flowers bloom in the spring. Each morning at dawn, morning bird is singing and everything. My son is missing. Don't be late. That's why I can hardly wait. Come on, open up, open up, open up that golden gate, California. Here I come.
You don't, Al, you don't mind the photographers,
no,
do you?
No.
I think I should redraw the picture because by now, you may think it's a very early hour, Al, 4 o'clock in the morning, but I'll bet you that people have poured out of Lindy's. The guy is probably losing money right this minute. Everybody has poured out of Lindy's saying, look, Jolson is on the air this morning and they're rushing home to get to the radios, and by now we probably have 10 times more of the audience than we had an hour ago. And I think we ought to redraw the picture for you, give you a verbal picture. We're in Studio 7 at the Mutual Studios in New York. It's a studio about 50 feet square, and Al Jolson is sitting across from me, Harry Axe to the piano, and seated around on the floor we have Leo Lindy, we have Henny Youngman, who's come over from the Capitol Theater, Joey Fay, who just stepped in from the National Theater, he's doing a little cleaning up there, Julie Ocean, and Yuki Sharon from the Kraft Music Hall. Everybody's sitting around. We have a sponsors booth full of people. We have a couple of engineers that are trying their best to make this sound as good as the Columbia picture, The Jolson Story. You notice those rapid plugs in there. I got to keep that thing on for 12 weeks or I lose money.
And by now I've sung my 8th song.
I haven't seen the picture, but did they bring out in the picture that Jolie at one time, or probably still is today, voted as one of the world's greatest whistlers?
Oh, yeah, that whistling.
Why do you like that? Just because I whistle?
Do you really whistle with the fingers in your mouth?
Yeah, you know how I started whistling?
No.
Well, years ago when I couldn't get a job singing, I used to follow around a couple of organ grinders till they chased me away, and when they'd get money thrown to them, you know, from the different office buildings or from the windows, the Italian organ grinders, I'd whistle a chorus. And as they'd throw the money, I'd grab and run like the devil. And I started to whistle. I mean, I'll show you if you want me to. Harry will play Swanee, and it's a funny thing. Nathan Kramer's sitting here, you know, if you don't mind, it's not really a plug, but he's done a lot of wonderful things for him because, you know, you can't get a room in town in any hotel, as you know.
Uh-huh.
And I've sent people from the coast over the Edison. I mean, it's no plug because they can't get in there. But he's one of the first, I think he remembered when he saw me with Doc Stetter, and I whistled the American Patrol, which I do for a little bit in the picture. It's kind of a background, you know. That's right, Harry. Oh, good. I don't know if you knew it. But if you play Swanee, I wish you could... and I'll show you. I'll whistle one of the choruses in Swanee. Mr. Engineer, you know, oh, Mr. Radio Man, tell my daddy to come back home. He's listening to Jolson, you know. And when it comes to the whistling, I think I can, if I can keep these eyes open. Swanee, it is.
I've been away from you a long time. I never thought I'd miss you so. Somehow I feel your love is real. Near you I want to be. The birds are singing in a song time. The banjo's strumming soft and low. I know that you yearn for me too. Swanee, you're calling me. Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. I'd give the world to be among the folks in D-I-X-I, even though my mammy's waiting for me, praying for me down by the Swanee. The folks up north won't see me no more when I get to that Swanee shore. I love the old folks at home. Ah, Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. The folks up north will see me no more when I get to that Swanee shore. That's it.
You notice how the ham bones in here quick rushed in and put a WOR sign on the mic because maybe there's going to be a picture taken. They want to get the local credit. Yeah, Henny.
Hey, Barry, I always want to ask Mr. Al Jolson,
whether he was the first blackface comedian that appeared in blackface, or whether the Eddie Cantor and those fellows followed him and put the black on, or what was the custom? Was that the custom those days for a single to go out and do blackface?
In vaudeville it was, not musical comedy. I was the first one to ever do a blackface in a musical show in New York.
That's what I mean.
What I mean by that is there probably have been ahead of me in legitimate shows, such as Grammers, who played a servant, you know, Southern plays, or any kind of play for that matter, that they had a butler or a waiter or anything like that. But at the Winter Garden, I was the first one that had the nerve, you might as well say, to put on blackface and talk back to the audience. You know, if a guy come in late, I'd say, where have you been? You know, you do that. But anyway, I used to also have the famous crack, I mean, that's been done a lot of times. You know, when people walk out doing your act sometime, I'd say, where are you going? I used to do that, but I cut it out, because one time we were playing in Cleveland, and right in the middle of my act, a fella got up to go out. And it's very embarrassing, you know, to a person who's going out. They may have to catch a train or someone ill at home. Invariably, a comic or an alleged comic says, where are you going? So this night, this fella in Cleveland, right in the middle of a song or something I was doing, got up and started to walk out. And I said to him, where are you going? And he answered me right back. What's the matter? Isn't this intermission? Since then, if I ever get a job, I don't say anything anymore.
He was probably laying for you, waiting for you to come through that line.
Yes, sir.
Jolie.
What?
Tell us about the time you entered a Jolson contest and ran about fourth or fifth.
Well, in fact, I didn't even run fourth or fifth. They booed me off the stage. It was at the Haymarket in Chicago. The Haymarket in Chicago is a very funny thing. Frank Kinney, who's been dead and gone many years, he went on and won it. And I followed him, and they hollered at me, and get off of there, you bum, you stink.
They had a contest to pick the guy that worked most like Jolson.
That's right.
And you were booed off the stage.
Yeah. I blacked up and put on a flight wig with a lot of hair and a lot of loud clothes, and I went on, and I sang, what was it I sang? It's better to have just a little too much than not quite enough. If ever a man ain't satisfied, it certainly is rough. And a guy like that, it's rough, all right. Get off of there, you bum.
What was that song, Rockabye My Baby? My Dixie Lullaby. What was that song?
Well, that's in a picture. That's in a picture. That's a little hard to sing without an orchestra. You know, Rockabye Your Baby with a Dixie melody. But in singing a song like that, all Mammy songs, all songs of that type really came from Mammy. And a lot of songs I sang at the Winter Garden, I'd get them like in the afternoon and put them on at night with just a piano, you know, just a lead sheet in my hand, and would sing it right from the copy.
I'll never forget, I was with a vaudeville act several years ago, and we were on the bill with Sophie Tucker. We were playing her music. We had a five-piece band, and we were on the bill with the Sonny Boy picture. Was that the name of it? And it affected the singer with our band so much in Trenton that he got on the train that night, went home, and had to see his kid.
Really? Well, that's why sometimes I hate to sing the song. I never sang it overseas unless somebody asked me, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it.
I wanted to ask you, how about the Sunday night concerts at the Winter Garden?
Well, the Sunday night concerts at the Winter Garden, they became an institution. They really did. I mean, I remember one time we closed on a Saturday night when he asked me about me hurting my leg. This really happened. On a Saturday night, we closed, and we were supposed to open Philadelphia on a Monday. So I thought I'd take the midnight train and go to Philadelphia. And I did. Well, the next night at 8 o'clock, they called me from New York to hurry up and come back on a Sunday night, you know, to do a Sunday night concert. I said, why? They said, well, it was around 9 o'clock, and the show is pretty bad, and we need you. And I said, I can't. I want a couple of days rest. I said, I open Monday in Philly. Well, they said, you make it. Leave here at 9 o'clock. Get in at 11. We'll hold the audience. And so said, we'll have a police escort meet you at the Pennsylvania station. So I jumped on the train at 9 o'clock. This was about a quarter to 9 to Bellevue Stratford. And I got to New York at 11, and I jumped in a cab, and they took me to the Winter Garden. The show was pretty bad, and I quieted them down. As you know, the front rows were all, in those days, performers and nightclub entertainers and saloon men and so-called mobsters, you know, those days. And we'd had the runway in before that. And after the Saturday night show, they evidently took it out. And instead of the runway, which was solid, they put a red piece of carpet, and they had it just tacked with nothing underneath, you know, but strung tightly from the front to the back. And me on the stage, I sang a song called I'm Glad My Wife's in Europe, because she won't get back, she won't get back. And I took a leap from the stage, and boom, I went right through there and broke my ankle and my kneecap and everything. And those Sunday nights, really, what little success I've had, I owed a lot to those Sunday nights.
Because
it wasn't
well, is it true as in the picture it's a command performance? You were not working on Sunday nights.
What, in the picture?
No, in the picture it brings out the fact that on Sunday night you weren't working, and then they asked you to...
Oh, yes, lots of times. I'd be standing back of the house like there, and the gang would start to holler, "We want Jolson." And I'd go on. And I got sick of it because I didn't get paid, you know, and the Schuberts would fix it for somebody to holler Jolson, too.
You want to hear the story, Barry, about how Al Jolson, I don't know what show it was, was it Bombo, where the show wasn't so good, and you went out and won, and you threw the book away at the show, and you just sang songs, and the audience...
Well, no, there's a lot of shows. Barry, we do it, Henry, we do a thing like that in a picture, and we don't go at great length on it, because a picture's got to last just so long, you just can't run it forever.
I mean, that was a true story, though, wasn't it, years ago?
I used to, for instance, in the picture here, is a story like the Winter Garden. It got to be around 11 o'clock, 11:30, and it was getting pretty late. And there was a love scene, and I said, "Go ahead." I said, she said to me, "But I can't get along good with him. He don't want me." Southern show. And I said, "Well, go ahead and kiss him, because if you don't," I said, "the people won't be able to get back to Brooklyn. They're going to a lot of people in White Plains." Well, the people thought I was a little nuts. Well, in those days, I started to tell you before, a blackface comedian couldn't do that. You know, if he was being fresh, you know, out of character. But I got so I spoke to the Vanderbilts and the Goulds and the Whitneys, and it was just a jolly time was had by all on Sunday night.
Many the night in Big Boy, I've seen Jolson myself forsake the finale and just stay out there and finish the show, and the people were just as happy about it that they...
I've talked 20 minutes of the show.
Yeah, Barry, I just want to say this. I said to a fellow one night, "I'm tired." You know, and the fellow says, "How do you think we are sitting out there, you know what I mean, applauding all hours of the night?" Of course, that makes me sound like egotistical saying that.
"But a guy who's lived as many years as I have, sir, these moments come few and far between, and I'm glad to be here."
Well, I've talked about it. I've talked about it many times, the fact that you would bring the whole cast out on stage, and you would tell jokes, and I've had 50 people up here that I've asked questions about Jolson. And, of course, the most famous story that I've heard about Jolson is the one about the overcoat with your father. Is that a true story?
Yeah. Well, I sent him the overcoat?
Yeah.
And he asked me how much it was, you mean?
Yeah.
And I sent it, told him that, really, I paid $100 for the coat, and I told him it was only $20, and 2 weeks later he says, "Send me six more, sold us for
$30. That's the story.
Something like that.
Wonderful.
But the cutest story I ever told of my dad, because it really happened, I came to Washington with a show, and my dad wasn't much for theater, elderly gentleman, and he was quite a scholar and a rabbinical sort of a figure. And I told him, I says, "Pop," I says, "this show, this is Wonder Bar, quite a few years ago, about 18 years ago. He said, "What kind of show is Wonder Bar?" I said, "Pop, you don't know." I said, "This is the greatest show we ever saw." I said, "Not only will this show play," I said, "all over America and all the key cities." I said, "I sing in French, I sing in German, I sing in Spanish, I sing in Russian." I said, "Then," I said, "after it plays here," and the moment I said that, he took out a big old-fashioned watch and snapped it, and he said, putting it at 8 o'clock. I said, "Pop, you're not listening, I'm telling you. Not only will the show play all over America," I said, "well, I guess through America, it'll play England. It'll play before the clown heads." And he took out that watch again. He said, putting it at 8 o'clock. And I said, "Pop, you're not listening. I tell you, when it gets through," I said, "playing there, then I'm going to make a picture of it." I said, "then it'll be, it'll revolutionize everything, because it'll play all over the world, China, every place." And he said, putting it at 8 o'clock. And finally, I couldn't stand long. I said, "Pop, what's the idea of that 8 o'clock business?" He said, "Amos and Andy." That is my dad.
Now, was that the first time you ever sang that song, about Taylor? I heard you sing it.
That was in Wonder Bar, yeah. You mean The Cantor on the Sabbath, yeah.
Yeah.
What songs do you want to sing, Al?
Songs? I don't think Harry knows anymore, to tell you the truth, except I'd like to if I could sing a lullaby to put these people in all these towns to sleep. But I could sing a mammy if you want to hear me sing
Mammy.
Love
to hear a mammy.
Or you want me to sing You Made Me Love You.
I'd like to hear that. The two of them, I'd like to hear Quarter to Nine.
Well, I don't think Harry knows all those songs. You see, Harry is on... He can't play a quarter after nine, 20 after four. But I tell you, Harry, you play You Made Me Love You nice and soft, and I'll sing it real soft. What?
You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me want to. And all the time you knew it. I guess you always knew it. You made me happy sometime. you made me sad. But there was time, baby, I felt so bad. You made me sigh, for I didn't want to tell you, I didn't want to tell you. I want some love, that's true, you know I do. Indeed I do, yes I do. Give me what I cry for. You know you got the kind of kisses that I'd die for. You know you made me love you.
You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me love you.
And all the time you knew it. I guess you always knew it. You made me happy sometimes. Oh, you made me glad. But there were times, baby.
Oh, you know.
You made me cry, for I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you. I want some love, that's true. You know I do, indeed I do, yes I do. Gimme, 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 gimme what I cry for. You know you got the kind of kisses that I'd die for. You know you made me love you.
You know, just as you ended on that last note, you hit the Dixie cup on the table.
Yeah.
You took the picture.
Yeah.
So it's going to come out. Dixie cups are underwritten by Al Jolson.
How do you like
you
that?
You just did a testimonial.
I'd like to get it.
I know an interesting thing about Billy. The time he was at the right of the White House.
Yeah. Sitting there with the Whitneys. You tell this in Big Boy. What? Sitting there with the Whitneys and the Vanderbilts. Of course, you had to sing a few songs, you said.
Mm-hmm.
But as well as the president knew you.
Yeah.
I forgot what it was you had for breakfast.
Well, what was it? I said, well, the president knew me. I said, he had to have ham there. I didn't know. That was, I think, a joke, something like that. And then also, I remember Mrs. Coolidge, she had a collie, a white collie dog. And I said to her, I said, isn't that wonderful? That dog's never seen me before. I did it with a little dialect, you know. I said, how he loves me. Keeps kissing my hand all the time. She said, Al, if he used a napkin, he wouldn't do it. That's, I mean, children. those jokes.
Mrs. Coolidge.
Mrs. Coolidge, yeah. I knew Mr. and Mrs. Coolidge, President Mrs. Coolidge, President Harding, his wife, very well, and President Wilson's wife very well. I met President Roosevelt in Washington. I also met him in New York when he was, I think, fire commissioner many, many years ago. And I knew the kids, Elliot and Frank, mm-hmm. Jimmy, knew all of them.
Well, Elliot's on this network now. Elliot does a radio show.
Yeah?
Yeah, every
But
every
not morning. In the middle of the night.
No, well, it's practically the same. You know, they got breakfast shows now. Husbands and wives get together.
Yeah,
no,
Jane Falkenberg and her wife. Yeah, she used to be my show. She woke
network.
Me up at 7 o'clock in the morning and asked me to come on.
With Tex McCrary?
Yeah, I guess so.
Did you go?
Well, it is a certain amount of chivalry, you know, when you come from the South, that you can't refuse. Southern part of Russia, I know all those jokes.
Well, you lived in Baltimore a long time. Or was it
no,
Washington?
Not in Baltimore. I lived in Washington a great deal of the time. I have a brother there now who owns a drugstore. You ought to hear him talk. I had a song one time called You'll Hear Me Calling, Yoo-Hoo. And he wanted to be an actor. He wanted to sing a song in the gallery. He said, why can't I sing that song in the gallery, brother? He said, that's what song? He said, you know, Yo-Ho. That's near to Yoo-Hoo. He could come. Yo-Ho.
He talks, he actually has
Yo,
a
Yo, even
accent.
Today, yes. He laughs at anything I say. My best audience. I send money home regularly.
You live in California now permanently. That's your.
Well, I don't know. I don't know, Barry. I say I live in California permanently. I don't think I could really say that. I bought a home, not one of those homes that you read about in California. We have two little bedrooms, the whole house, my wife and I, but we have got a cute little place. A little cottage at Palm Springs that I bought that I don't think I'll ever give up. But I'm daffy about Florida. I go there every year regardless. I spent a month or two. I like the ocean, and I like New York for a certain length of time. The buildings kind of close in on me here. You know, you're used to those open spaces, and here you take a walk once in a while.
down Madison Avenue, down Park, down Fifth. You don't get over Broadway as much as you used to, but in California and Beverly Hills, you don't walk at all, because if you do, a policeman thinks you're a vagrant. Everybody there has 11-cylinder cars, you know, butlers and footmen and whatnot, and swimming pool with zippers on them, I don't know. A little far-fetched.
How about the overseas thing? Of course, that was the reason for the real reason for the dinner they gave you the other night at the Astor Hotel.
Well, the overseas thing, I tell you, I got a terrific boot out of it. I was all done such great jobs, but I happened to be the first one, and they figured a guy my age could do it, they would do it too.
Mm.
But I was a guinea pig. If Jolson didn't get killed, you know.
Yeah.
Hope and Benny and all of them did all a magnificent job. But I was over in the Aleutians first one, and then I was over in England the first one. And when I got to England, I asked General Eisenhower, I said, well, I played every place else. Why don't you send me back? And he said, what do you want to go back for? I said, well, I played every place. And I said, I want to see the World Series. It was around October, so he sent me back. And then a year later, I was over in Algiers. And I guess it can be told now, ordinarily couldn't. I was here in New York getting ready to go overseas to China, India, wherever it was, and you got your papers, but you didn't open them, you know, until you got on the plane to go over. I don't mean the plane here, but a plane outside, out of Miami, to go to Natal, and then to Dakar, and Karachi, India, and so on. So, while I was here one day, my phone rang, and Mrs. Eisenhower was on the phone. She says, you're going over, will you give my best to the general? And I said, this is a good time to get in with the general. I said, what do you want me to say to him? And she started telling me, I said, wait a minute, I'll get a pencil and I'll write it down on a piece of paper. So I did. And the note was something like this. Dear Dwight or Ike, I forget which it was. It says, Al will give you this note and he'll give you a big kiss. I mean, he'll give you a swift kick, too, for not writing more often. And so on. And Johnny was home just a few weeks ago and he had a birthday and he feels fine. And a little note to that effect. Well, anyway, when we got on the plane, Harry X and I, out of Miami, and we were flying over the Devil's Island, you know, the French Guiana. And I opened these orders, and he said, Karachi, India, into China. So I said to one of these paratroopers we had on board, I said, do you know I've got to go to China? He says, you must be nuts. He says, you'll die there. He says, all you can get is fish, heads, and rice. Well, I happened to think of that letter I had in my pocket. So when we got to Dakar, Africa, I took it out and showed it to a general. I said, does that mean anything? He says, that means that you've got to go to headquarters in Algiers. So I went from there to Marrakech and then to Casablanca where we worked, from Casablanca to Oran, and Oran down to Algiers, and I had a tough time, but I walked in on headquarters, and I met Harry Butcher, who was his aide. And he says, what are you doing here? I'd known him from England, you know, the year before. And I said, I just come to tell you, I said, that your wife has moved out of the Wardman Park Hotel. She doesn't live in the same apartment with Mrs. Eisenhower anymore. He said, well, what are you really doing here, Al, after he left? And I says, I came here to see the general. He said, well, you can't go in to see him now. He's got a kid in there, a young kid by the name of General Giroux. Well, out came a guy with more, you never saw so many medals in your life. And then came another general. And he said, hello, Al. And I said, how do you do, sir? He said, don't you remember my name? I said, sure. General Spatz. He says, Al, please pronounce my name correctly. It's Spatz. I said, well, when I get back, I said, and I buy some Spam, I'm going to change the spelling of it, call it Spam. And we just clowned along like that, and I said, I've got to go and see the general. Well, a few minutes later, I was ushered in to see General Eisenhower, and he seemed to have, he's had a little accident with his left or right foot, I forget, and he wore a copper slipper. And he said, what's the matter? You want to go see the World Series again? I said, no, not right now, but I have a little note from you, for you, rather, from your wife. And he read it, and he said, that kiss that she sends me, you can, when you go back to America, you can give it back again. I said, but there's something else in there. He said, something about a big kick. Well, when you're in front of greatness, I'm a little nervous even telling this, you know, you're kind of awed quite a bit. But he stooped over, and I, with my bare hand, I slapped him across the fedora and did very well. But, and then we stayed there quite a while, Harry and I, and I came back from that trip, and I got pneumonia and malaria, and then I went over again, and I picked up something in Sicily. I don't know what it was, a bug, and it settled in my lung, and they cut out a couple of ribs. They called it an empyema with an abscess of the lung. That was a year ago, December. And I looked for a while that I wasn't going to live, but in fact, I feel better now than I ever have. I mean, really, in the last 20 years.
You sing great, too.
Well, maybe it's I'm a one-long singer. I don't know. I don't like to sing.
What did you think of the dinner that night?
Well, funny thing. I don't know. Naturally, I was thrilled, Barry. Dinner given to a guy like me for being an outstanding entertainer for the men in service and give me a big scroll and all that. But I happen to think that for 3 years I didn't work outside of making this picture, and I didn't have a job. And I said, what did they give me this dinner for? I said, I haven't been working. They give a guy a dinner that, you know what I mean, that they give, after you live 50-some years, you know, you, especially in showbiz, pictures, radio, you get ulcers. And I couldn't eat so good that night. But the thrill I got with the dinner was outside of being a great thrill for many reasons, but my wife was seated there, and she'd never... Well, she didn't know, and I mean, if she knew me, never know I was on the scene. I did real well, and never even seen me in a picture.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was an X-ray technician in the hospital in Hot Springs, Arkansas, the Eastman Annex. That's where I met her. And so she used to come to the hospital and take X-ray pictures of me when I was sick. And so if I get sick again, she'll take some more pictures.
I was at the dinner, Al, and I confess, I wrapped the dinner because when I came back, well, I went to the dinner, I was thrilled, you know. I was going to see a lot of the people that had worked with Jolson. I was going to see Jolson. I was going to hear some stories, nostalgic stories, that were going to give me some great material. And for my own amazement, I was going to hear the story of Jolson. This was going to be the biggest thing that had ever happened. And I walked into the Astor Hotel, and it looked like a millinery model show. Everybody was sitting there with the big hats, and they were sitting around the tables. They were about 30 feet apart. I didn't know anybody. Nobody knew anybody else. And the guys that were very much wrapped up in the saga of Jolson were strangely missing. A lot of your friends were there. But when I heard the radio show, it's true that Jessel belonged on the show, and I've heard the history of Jessel and Jolson and everything. It's true that Jessel belonged there, and there were a couple other guys that definitely belonged in there. But actually, as the show went on, I stopped to think... Now, Sinatra is a very nice guy. He's a wonderful guy. And Perry Como's a very nice guy. And Hildegard can't sing, but she's pretty to look at. But why this on the Jolson dedicatory broadcast? You know, where were the guys, the Joe Loy, for example? I mean, that would be a good guy to tell the story of Jolson. A lot of the fellas that had come up along Broadway with you at the same time.
Well, I can answer that in a way. Sidney Skalski, you know, is a columnist, and he was a producer of this picture. And he's a fine fella and all that. And he got, you know, picture business and show business and radio. It all is kind of kin, and they it's all publicity, and I guess there was a lot of publicity in conjunction with this picture, too.
Yeah.
And Skalski got all these people going. In fact, one fellow who didn't go on felt very hurt. He wrote me, and when I met him in Los Angeles, he said, why wasn't I asked? Well, they just didn't ask him. They forgot Jack Benny.
Yeah.
You know. It was great of Bob Hope to do it. It was great of Hildegard to do it and all that. But as I say, it was a little publicity, you know.
Yeah. It didn't seem right to me. And as I say, I came back and I reviewed the thing and talked about it. And it made me feel bad because it didn't have the dignity. That's the word. It didn't have the dignity that a dinner of that type deserved. Nobody went to eat. And yet everybody ate good and they burped a couple of times. When it came time for the big festivities, there were no festivities.
Well... $12.50 a piece they paid to eat, and dinners in New York of that type, they want to get their money's worth. And I know I heard some people say afterwards that the show wasn't so good. So you get the idea they didn't come to pay homage to a man. But I felt about it in much the same way, but I did get a terrific kick out of it because I felt like this. Who was I to have Bob Hope get up and say that there's a little Jolson in all of us and, you know, and so on.
Yeah. It happens to be true, though.
Yeah, well...
I can say that it happens to be true, Al, because you've led the industry for years, and it's true. You listen, you go out to see performers today that this guy's got a little trick and that guy's got a little trick, but you put them all together and there's only one Jolson. And I'm not buttering you on one side and down the other, Al, because I've said these things when you weren't here.
No, but the only thing you're doing is saying this, and you're only going to get me to come back here and do this over again. I'll learn some new songs next time.
We haven't heard all the old ones.
Well,
yet.
I'll sing one old one here now. If I'll get back to piano, I'd like to kind of finish with Mammy, if you don't mind.
And can I just? Oh, I'll wait for the station identification.
All right. Go ahead.
Everything seems lovely when you start to roam. The birds are singing the day that you stray. But wait until you are further away. Things won't be so lovely when you're all alone. Here's what you'll keep saying when you're far from home. Mommy, mommy. The sun shines east, the sun shines west. I know where the sun shines best. Mammy, my little mammy, my heartstrings are tangled around Alabama. I'm a coming. Sorry that I made you wait. I'm a coming. Hope and trust that I'm not late. My little mammy, I'd walk a million miles for one of your smiles. My mammy, oh. Mammy, my little mammy, the sun shines east, the sun shines west. I know where the sun shines best. It's on my mammy I'm talking about. Nobody else's. My mammy. My heartstrings are tangled around Alabama. Mammy. Mammy, I'm coming. Oh, if I didn't make you wait. Mammy, I'm coming. Oh, God. I hope I'm not late. Mammy, look at me. Don't you know me? I'm your little baby. I'd walk a million miles for one of your smiles. My mommy.
Al, I know you're tired.
Report
you're
tomorrow tired? On the stage at the Capitol Theater with me, please.
Yeah, so report at Radio City Music Hall and get in.
I'd like to.
You know, it's a funny thing.
What?
I don't know whether you're serious or not, Al, but there was a gal up here about 3 weeks ago, a lady by the name of Fanny Hurst. Lady by the name of Fanny Hurst that said something about wanting to bang down the doors of radio. And there's another lady who's had a very illustrious career, big name in literature and everything. Next day she got a call from another network, and last Thursday night she went on her own show on another network competing with Mutual and WOR.
Well, Barry, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not what you call looking for a job. It's just the feeling that I'd like to have my doors broken down,
mm-hmm.
even by one guy, to say, yeah. Oh, we want that guy Jolson on because he's really good. We'd like to have him on, and so forth and so on.
Al, when I was on the coast, may I interrupt?
Yeah.
I was sitting on a beach, and you got a call from the Kraft Music Hall, if I remember then.
Yeah.
And they wanted you to go on the air for them. And you were very hesitant at the time. I don't know why.
I tell you why I was hesitant. I want to do a show.
So what do you want to do it?
Well, not exactly. I don't want to be the guy to say, I'll only do it, you know, this, that. That must be my way. That isn't true. I just don't want to go on and do a show with those bad jokes anymore.
I want to be natural.
That's right. As natural as I can be. You know.
How about the Shell Show?
That was all right. But that was a comedy show. That's had its day. Most of those comedy shows have really had their day.
Yeah.
I really don't think there's been, in the last 5 years, pardon me, much improvement in radio. I think it's been very stale, really,
I do.
I mean, when you get a fella on now what's this fella, Morgan, that's on now?
Yeah.
You go nuts. You love it. You know, I mean, something different.
He's terrific.
I mean, really, I mean, years ago, before the war, I used to wait 6:15 at night around that time with a guy go on and say, yes, sir, so-and-so shoes. Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. They may be good, but I've never worn those shoes. And so forth and so on. But it's good. But here you've got to go out and say how good the product is. Well, I remember I was on a show one time. What was it? Yes, Lifebuoy Soap. And I said, I want you folks to know how good Lifebuoy Soap is. I said, it's really a great soap. I said, for instance, if you have some silver home, if you have some, you know, it was a toothpaste I was on. This was another time, toothpaste. I think it was Colgate toothpaste, yeah. I said, I want to show you folks how good this toothpaste is. This was before the show, you know, the warm-up of the audience. And I said, it's so good. If you have some silver home and it's tarnished and dirty, you take, I said, one little teeny, weeny piece of toothpaste. You put it on the silver, rub it for a couple of minutes,
I said, then take a cloth and rub it off. And I said, the silver will be as good as new, which will give you a rough idea what it'll do to your teeth. Well, it was just in clowning, you understand. That night they asked me, they said, where do you think you'll play next week? And I said, I don't know, but I think I'll be in the valley living home. And I did. They said, you're so long, Joe. You know, what this fellow Morgan, it's very cute, you know.
Yeah.
And then I had Barrymore, John Barrymore. He was on the program one time, and he did a soliloquy from Hamlet. And you know the big thing in Life Boy is Beale.
Yeah.
You know, Beale. So I had John Barrymore do the soliloquy. He said, to Beale or not to Beale, that is a question. And they asked me to leave that show, too.
Well, I don't get it. I think
well, no sense of humor.
I think it's a terrific plug. No, on the contrary, I've got some sponsors that well look at this morning,
sure,
Al. I've got four sponsors, and the four of them tell me when we've got guests, forget the commercials. And I do a little thing. I get on and I say, I want to thank my sponsors for not taking too much of my time this morning. And they
like
it.
You have guys that understand you.
They do business.
Well, I think it may be coming to that. But if a sponsor said to me, Al, don't kid the product, I wouldn't kid the product. I'd like to go on. I'd like to sing nice songs, say nice things. I'd like to say, I remember this song.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Rector's in 1907, or 10, or whenever it was, and across from me sat a very beautiful girl, Lily Lorraine. She'd just come from the Ziegfeld Theater where I'd sat in the fourth row, and I heard her sing. Now, there's nothing wrong about that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the type of show I'd like to do. I heard Faith Templeton and tell a little story about how I learned Rosie on my poesy and what have you.
I think somebody's going to buy that.
We don't have a really big singing star on this network for my dough. A lot of guys are going to argue with me, but I don't want to get into any office memos. But we got a guy listening right now, right this minute, who sits up all night and grabs me, buttonholes me in the hall in the daytime when I come in. I come in about once a week, grab the check and run. And he grabs me and he says, you keep me up nights with those people that come in. A fellow by the name of Sylvan Levin, who's the musical director of Mutual. And I'll bet you get a call from the guy tomorrow, because he'll probably call up and offer big money. Don't grab it. They always get bigger after the third offer.
No, let me tell you something. That's not exactly what I'm interested in. It isn't money. I'd like to do a show and the pride of it by having a big Crosley and have a big listening audience. And that would be a big kick for me to say, oh, I'm doing as good as so-and-so, and I'm doing as good as so-and-so, you know? But just honestly, believe me when I tell you, the money's secondary. You can't keep a great deal of it, you know, with the tax situation as it is, so it doesn't matter.
Can I tell you something, Al? This is from a radio guy, and my racket is radio. And Crosley's, I don't think, mean anything.
It does for those cuckoos.
I know it does, but Crosley's don't mean anything. What counts to me is you can feel it when a show's being listened to, when you walk down Broadway and a hack driver knows who you are, or a hack driver stops you and says, I heard your show last night. Three guys in front of Lindy's say, I heard your show last night. You get a letter from a gal in West Virginia who wants your picture. You get a letter from a guy in Des Moines, Iowa, who wants to break your neck because you don't like Vaughn Monroe. Things like that. Then you know the show's being listened to. Funny thing about Crosley's, they get shows, terrific shows. Come up with a Crosley of 4 and 5, and everybody listens to them, but they can only prove a Crosley 4. And other shows that nobody listens to has a Crosley of 20.
You mean that's on account of the phoning-in system?
Yeah, a lot of people don't have telephones. I mean, now this is a guy on radio saying this. It's a very brash statement to make, but that's the way I feel. I don't think there's any true way of proving an audience. The only true way is who buys it on the counter is whatever you're selling.
Jody,
what?
I've been on the air with Crosby for 4.5 years, and I came back to New York thinking everybody's going to say it. Here's a kid that was up in the mountains. Gee, I heard you on the air with Crosby. But no, the first night I get here, I happen to be on with Barry. And so when I went around the street to make my appearance, you think they said anything about Crosby? He says, heard you last night with Barry Gray. You were great. No. Well, never mentioned a thing that I was on 4 years with Crosby. Forgot about it.
Well, Crosby's such a big name, you know. It's a peculiar thing. You know, you come to a station like this and you get a lot of recognition, because where could a person speak, as I say, without... say 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half hour without having a script in front of them and talk wrong. Absolutely.
No.
I remember Dizzy Dean was one time with me, and James J. Jeffries was one time on with me, and Jeffries had a script in his hand. I said, Jim, I said, tell me about the greatest fight you ever fought. And he said, he looked at the script and he said, well, the greatest fight I ever fought was one fight I fought with Tom Sharkey. Then I had a broken rib when I fought with Roland. And I grabbed the script out of his hand. I said, tell me again the greatest fight you ever had. He said, well, one time I fought Jack Johnson. He's in Reno, Nevada. I'll never forget. I wasn't in shape. And went right on wonderful, you know, at least.
Yeah.
It was great.
Well, we don't have a Crosley on. I didn't say that. I didn't say that to bring out what you said. We don't have a Crosley on the show because they don't have Crosleys after midnight. But we know that there's that many people listening because we know the... Well, when this thing started, you couldn't sell a guy on the fact, put a spot on the show. They'd say, who listens at night? Arnold Rubin gave me a famous line one night. I met him once about a year and a half ago. And Alan Corelli of the AGVA introduced us and said, I want you to meet this kid that works at night and talks about your restaurant every once in a while. He looked at me and says, who listens? Well, I never forgot that. I never forgot it because it was a poke in the puss, for one thing. And I knew that people listened. I knew that we had doctors and dentists and lawyers and show people and all kinds of people that sat up at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. A guy can't sleep, you know. Insomnia is no respecter of position. Just because a guy's got money, as a matter of fact, the richer they are, the less they can throw.
Oh, yes, I haven't slept for days.
And I sleep, Al. And it's a funny thing that, as Yuki has pointed out, we get from our mail. We get fellas that live on Park Avenue. We get guys that live on Orchard Street. Well, anyway, enough of that. I'll bet you get offers this week.
Well, I'm going to leave town about Wednesday or Thursday and go home because my wife asked me not just, honey, when you're leaving. I've only been here 2 days. I got here Friday, and this is only Saturday. And today I saw a football game, and if I'm going to get up tomorrow, Barry, to see the Giants play the Bears, I'll have to be leaving soon, and I want to tell you this has been, believe me, I want to tell you this has been a bigger kick in my dinner. I'm going to get Hail Columbia for saying that, but I got a chance to say a few words here tonight that I wanted to get off my chest. I got a chance, the ham in me came out to sing a zillion songs. I had my picture snapped. I saw where Mutual was put on the thing, WR was put on the thing, and I've had a few people here that I know personally and socially for a great many years, and Well, it's been swell.
Can we have one more song?
I don't know what to sing. I haven't got the slightest
idea. Can I ask you to do Rosie again?
Rosie again? Harry, just play. I'll sing one chorus of Rosie.
One chorus of Rosie,
because the second chorus is a hard chorus. And I haven't the pipes. I must have sung 12 or 13 songs.
Before?
Harry, one chorus of Rosie, but just to make the first ending finish, you know.
Rosie, you are my posy. You are my heart's bouquet. Come out here in the moonlight. Have something sweet, love. I want to say, your honey boy, I'm waiting. Those ruby lips to greet. Don't be so aggravating, my blushing Rosie, my posy sweet. Rosie, you are my posy. You are my heart's bouquet. Come out here in the moonlight. Have some sweet love. I'm gonna sing about my baby. You're honey boy, I'm waiting. Those ruby lips to breathe. I'm gonna leave now, cause I'm getting sleepy. To kiss my Rosie, my posy sweet. Good night.
Now, before you go, the first of the wires have begun to come in, started to come in, the first of the wires, one of them says, Dear Al, please include California, Here I Come, in the numbers you're going to do over the air. Certainly I'm glad to hear your voice again. Best of luck. I'm recording your interview. This is your old friend of the past, Matt Glazer's right-hand man of the George Borger Vocal Letter Recording Company. That's a sure plug. The most thrilling and enjoyable evening I've ever spent in the theater was at the music hall listening to Al's songs, and from now on I shall always treasure the pleasure I receive from accidentally tuning in a great guy, paying his respect to regular fellas. Thanks, Arthur Jarwood. You'll get, I promise you, hundreds of these, Al, believe me. And I want to thank personally not only yourself, Al, but I want to thank Leo Lindy, who incidentally is the godfather of my Melody Ann. You know, we had an audition a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to thank Leo for bringing you up here this morning, because although I'm sure you could have found a way, it makes it much easier to have the guiding light of Broadway. I have no way of thanking you, Al, for coming up this morning. It's to me, the high spot of 22 months of broadcasting at night.
Don't thank me, because there's more ways than making, whipping a guy to make him cry, and I haven't forgotten how. There's a little lump in my throat, and I want to go home and swallow it.
Thank you very much, Al Jolson. And now, with the traditional three words, play the music.